Alrighty, hello everybody. We are doing our monthly webinar at Dope CFO, everything you need to know about entities and funding structures in cannabis. So I hope this helps you. This is a big topic of discussion, and it should be, because there are many, many startups coming into the space and there's a ton of misinformation out there. So I'm going to just jump in there. For those of you in our program, Dope CFO, already, you can skip the second half. The second half, I'm going to cover our Dope CFO program and everything you need to know about that, in case you are interested in that program to serve in this niche as a CPA, a bookkeeper, accountant, enrolled agent, et cetera. But then the first half, we'll dive in deep to these entities and structures. And we'll cover common cannabis CBD entity structures, including multi-entity, look at the pros and cons of each. Look at owner goals versus investor goals. Sometimes they're different. Sometimes investors are more concerned about protecting their assets as opposed to minimizing taxes. Looking at the key differences for each, some of the legal docs required, and also startup considerations. So I will just keep plugging away here. So actually, in our Facebook Live this morning, had a slide on the growth of the industry. I don't care what source you go to, Bloomberg, Forbes, Wall Street Journal, whatever, they underestimate the growth of this niche in the US and globally by a long shot. Every time these slides come out, they get bigger and bigger. But you can just go backwards in time and just see the size of the growth every year. This industry is moving forward rapidly. It will not go backwards. It's not a red issue. It's not a blue issue. The majority of Americans believe in medical cannabis and want it legalized. I think about 7 out of 10 of us now, for good reason. It's good medicine. The hospitals, universities, and scientists are backing that up now. They're testing with real science for all the many uses of cannabis. And then layer that over the opiate crisis we're facing. You can see this is going to be a big market. And a majority, it doesn't matter if they just polled Democrats only or independents or Republicans, you still get a majority that want this legalized. There's very few issues in the US that have that fact. Republicans, Democrats, and independents, the majority agreeing on. So just because we have that fact, that means it's gonna be coming. We have lots of knowledge on this. The IRS is ramping up audits. This is just in March, but even last year, they're coming in a big way. They're getting more funding, and they're coming after this industry because they know 8 out of 10 tax returns, the last time they look, are incorrect. They're underpaying. It's big, big dollars. You know, they can get $1 million out of a, you know, random cannabis company. So why wouldn't they go after these cannabis companies? And so we let the Dope CFO VIPs in our program let clients, farms, and dispensary owners out there know they better be doing this right, or they're going to likely be sad when here's another slide, same thing. From TIGTA report, yeah, we need increased tax compliance. It's coming. And by the way, if you follow any of the major news sources, you'll see endless amounts of violations. Everything, people going to jail, fraud, theft, bad accounting, bad tax. You just see report after report after report, and the IRS is winning most cases. Quick slide on who I am. I founded Dope CFO. I've won awards as both a CPA and a CFO. I speak all over the US. I think I'm speaking at 6 events this year, both for accounting events and cannabis events. I help plan and lead the AICPA event. I will be, the event this year is August 8th to 10th in Denver. So it's going to be a lot of fun. It's actually 3-day conference this year. And so I'll be speaking several times, as I believe a couple of my Dope CFOs will be there with me speaking too. Let's just jump into the tax codes right off the bat. This kind of layers us into the entity stuff, but this is important because this green highlighted trader business is a key issue. So 280E is very short. It's one sentence. So we can all learn this, whether we're in eighth grade or whether we have a PhD. It's pretty simple. Basically says, if you traffic in a drug on Schedule 1, heroin, cocaine, marijuana, whatever, you don't get deductions or credits on your tax returns. And they don't care if they don't care if you're selling heroin to eighth graders. You're still required to file a tax return. And when you do file your tax return, if you do, you're not allowed to get any deductions or credits. So where this got very tricky is now all of a sudden cannabis is state legal, but still federally illegal. So 280E applies. And a couple of key words in this sentence, trade or business, I go over and over this. It's many cases. Go ahead and Google the Harborside case. That is the longest, oldest case. It's been through the courts all the way to the top. They lost $11 million plus no telling how many millions in legal fees and lost on basically every point. But a trade or business, when the court looks at that, it's exactly that. It's a trade or business. Why do you think they use that word instead of like LLC or your C corp or your S corp or your partnership? They did this intentionally. They wanted to be incredibly broad because they were, think about it, they were out there trying to get illegal drug dealers. And so a drug dealer may not have any LLC or C corp. They might just be selling, you know, out of their bedroom to the neighbors or whatever. So trade and business is a very broad term. And so you could set up the most complicated grid of legal entities like some attorneys are pitching. Here's, you know, five LLCs and some subsidiaries, and we're going to isolate cannabis over there, and we're going to move costs over here. It does not work. They will come in and they will look at this from a 10,000 level height and say, that's a trader business, a single trader business, if that's what it is. Now that said, you could have one legal entity, you could have an LLC, and you could actually have more than one trader business in that single LLC. So you still might be able to meet your goal of dividing out costs if you have a legitimate non-cannabis business, even within your single LLC. So this question I get all the time, what's the best entity structure? The correct answer, and if anyone tells you differently, is it depends. There is no answer that fits all, period. And anyone that tells you there is, that's just a hint to you that, oh, they haven't looked into this subject very deeply. They have a vague understanding and they're trying to appear that they know everything. So the correct answer is it depends on many things. We need to know how many owners and how many investors there are. And we need to know what are the tax and asset positions of every single investor and owner. Why? Because they all have different goals and tax positions. So 199A may really help one owner, but not help another owner at all. And we need to know, is capital being raised? That's going to affect it as well. We have to know, are some of our owners focused more on asset protection and could care less on beating 280E? And then others, and a very common scenario we see exactly around this is rich aunt or uncle or cousin or whatever, maybe in their 50s. I'm even describing an exact client of mine. You know, had a $10 million construction company. His 25-year-old nephew up here in Oregon needed some money for the farm. And so over a couple of years, he funneled this guy $2 million with no accounting at all. And so this guy was really concerned about protecting his assets and not having his nephews get him in a legal situation where the 28-year-old could care less about protecting assets. They weren't his assets. And all the CEO cared about was minimizing taxes. And so we've got to know that. We've got to know if I have an investor in an LLC and maybe that they own 30% of that LLC. Well, guess what? They're going to get a big fat K-1 every single year because of 280E, because there's basically no deductions. And so can that owner fund that tax bill every year, even if the LLC makes zero distributions? And why does that happen? Well, because they're out of money all the time. It's so expensive to run a farm or dispensary chain with employees and labor, et cetera, even before tax, that there's usually very little money left over, even though the tax bill might be big. So we have to look at that as well. Do these same minority interest holders in an LLC understand the lack of control over distributions? They may not have any say so. And they're going to be, I have dealt with this exact situation, extremely angry investor that put up $2 million and was getting K-1s every year with zero distributions. And guess what? Since he only owned 30%, he could do nothing. He had no control. You need to look at that in your operating agreement for certain. We need to know what the entity tax rates are, expected future tax rates, what's going on in Congress. Are there estate planning issues, trust issues, many, many issues to look at. And so again, what's the best entity structure? It depends. That said, read the bottom in green. Most of us, including me, aren't attorneys. So I can guide and give advice and say, tell my client, say, hey, yeah, I'm not an attorney, but I still have knowledge in my head. And so I can look at like, oh, Joe wants asset protection and Sally wants this or whatever. We can look at those issues, even though we're not attorneys, but I'm going to make darn sure my client has a good corporate and tax attorney involved. And then we're going to discuss it as a group. That's the best way to look at structure, bring in the tax attorney, the corporate attorney, the dope CFO, VIP, and the CEO, and let's figure this out, and the investors as well. And let's have a group discussion and figure out where we're going to go and what's the best strategy around structure. Again, 199A is extremely complex. 199A does not fit any two individuals the same way because there are a gazillion different calculations and formulas in it. And so we need to look at the different, if someone's like, oh, I've got to have an LLC because I'm going to take advantage of 199A, but someone else gets no benefit out of that, that can be a conflict. So we got to look at that as well. We're going to look at corporate rates as well as pass-through rates. So for example, on a C-Corp, you can potentially get 1202 capital gain exclusion on exit. Could be a huge deal. LLC, you won't get that. So have these things been thought through? What about 1031 like-kind exchanges? So we've got, and even I missed the bottom point. What if tax rates changes? You know, the Democrats are in now, they're proposing to raise taxes. Even as administrations come and go, at the end of the day, our country has issued a mountain of debt and we're in the middle of inflation right now. And so they're in a real tight spot in Congress. You know, they don't want to raise interest rates because it'll kill the stock market, but they're going to deal with inflation and our country's got to get out of debt some way. So anyway, let's look at some of the common entity types and we'll just kind of go through them. So many, when you have a bigger group of people and lots of investors on day one, more often than not, and we see this in the high tech world as well, you see both LLCs and C-Corps out there raising money. It could be a software company. It could be a cannabis company. But more often than not, you'll probably see a C-Corp. It's a little bit easier for capital raise, particularly where the rates are right now. We don't know they'll stay at 21%, but it's not as high as it used to be. If the goal of the company is to grow and keep capital within the company and then exit, the double taxation issue is not quite a big. That's over on the con side of the column. Double taxation may not be an issue at all. Definitely C-Corps are better for asset protection. Also, the IRS liability, when they come, and they are coming, will be limited to corporation assets. Who would that be important to? Well, big, rich investors. They do not want some screw up out on the farm to affect their $5 million building that they're planning on leaving to their kids. So be careful on that. Same on audits. So if an IRS comes in to audit a C-Corp, that audit is going to stay at the C-Corp. If the IRS comes in to audit the LLC and they're like, huh, who are the investors? Ooh, look at Sally over there. Sally's a billionaire. Why don't we go audit her too and see what we find? That, so the audit can actually leak into individual owners. That can be a big issue. And then 1202 for exits under 25 million, you can potentially get out of some capital gain. So that can be a very, very big incentive. They're more on the con side, we talked about double tax. They're more costly to set up and maintain. And C Corp tax rate likely to increase at some point. That may or may not happen. And actually, that says 2021. But that said, you know, they're going to have to do something with our country's in really crazy amount of debt right now. So I don't know after COVID what they're going to do to address that. LLCs, you can potentially on the pro side get better tax rates. This is not certain because it's going to depend on the actual 199A laws, et cetera. Single tax, only one, not two. They're easy to set up and maintain, very low cost. You can notice the con list is a little bit longer over here. You've got to look at reasonable compensation issues for owner and self-employment tax. the IRS audit can leak to investors. There's minority interest issues. Those don't have to be a con if the operating agreement's set up correctly, but oftentimes operating agreements are not set up correctly and people don't think things through until the issue arises. There's potential tax payments due without cash. So if you're an LLC, the investors and owners are personally getting K-1s every year and having to pay real tax, where in the C-Corp pays the tax. 199A is super complex, might be harder to raise capital, 1202 loss, and IRS audits can go to the personal level. And so you want to be careful on that too. Multi-entity. So most cannabis companies use the multi-entity structure because they heard it somewhere at an event from an attorney or whatever. And they think, oh, I just need to set up five entities. And then this is how we beat 280E. We can just move costs around. Really, really bad idea. Because you're going to have more costs setting up and running these entities. And if the IRS comes in and you fail, because it's a trader business, they're not going to care that it's multi-entity, then they're going to look back in a sad way on this. Now, it can be better for asset protection, a legitimate reason. Say you have a dispensary on the corner and maybe the wife owns the land and the husband owns the dispensary. You may want to separate those in case something happens at the dispensary. No one can sue and take the real estate. So that can give you some real issues there. You might have easier access to banking and other services, might mitigate some tax issues, especially if you have an actual legitimate non-cannabis division, meaning it's profitable, it's substantial, and it is accounted for separately. Usually dispensaries and farms do not meet that test right there. And it can also allow for different owners and investors in different companies. Maybe one owner wants to own more of the real estate side, one owner wants to own more of the dispensary. And so that would be a legitimate reason. They're very costly. You're going to have more accounting and tax, obviously. You've got to manage now intercompany accounts, including consolidations, combinations, and subsidiary accounting, which most accountants either forgot how to do or don't do well, in my experience. More complex legally, a lot more to set up. And if the only reason is the strategies to beat 280E, I can just tell you it's a bad idea. The IRS already knows about it. So let's look at legal docs. On the C-Corp side, you got a lot of them at inception. You got your articles of incorporation, your bylaws, your board minutes, resolutions and consents, stock certificates, shareholder and employment agreements, and stock option plans. You likely will have actually shareholder minutes as well and consents, and then tax EIN number. Ongoing, you've got to do board meetings both for the board and shareholders, minutes and meetings, maintain a cap table, which can be very complex as well. So there's definitely more work. Make sure if you have a C-Corp client that your PBC list includes all these items and you're getting them up front. You cannot do good accounting if you do not have legal documents supporting every last thing. So we always make sure we get the right documents going in. LLC, simpler, as we said, to set up. So you've got your articles of organization as opposed to incorporation. You'll have an operating agreement. That is a very key document. Make sure you have it. It's got lots of things in there, including capitalization, distributions, who runs things. So make sure you have that. Could have an S-Corp election and state registrations. You have to do an annual report and a reasonable comp support. Now, this is a little bit outside of structures, but many people are now using this in the cannabis space too. And this is big in the startup world. So how do startups, whether it's high tech or medical or cannabis or whatever, how do they entice and reward employees and contractors? Well, they like to share equity. And so let's look at some of those issues. So if it's a C Corp and there's some kind of stock option plan, phantom equity, SAR, stock appreciation right plan, there's lots of different plans. You're going to have a lot of issues. You're going to need board and shareholder resolutions and consents. You will need a 409A company valuation every year. Those are expensive and take a lot of effort to complete. They're like an audit. You'll need the stock incentive plan, legal doc. It'll either be a non-qualified or incentive stock option plan. They're both very complex and have lots of tax issues, so make sure you understand those. Then we'll have a notice of a stock option grant to the employee. We'll have a stock option agreement with the employee. When they exercise options, we'll have more documents there, and then 83B tax elections as well. Ongoing, we got to track all these options, which ones are issued, granted, vested, exercised, and forfeited. I've done this and it can be a total nightmare. Make sure you have time budgeted and your client's paying for you if you're doing this. You got to maintain these legal documents and the cap table, which show current ownership plus fully diluted ownership. Also, gap accounting for any kind of stock equity compensation is complex. So these are just a few warnings to think about with your clients if you're doing this kind of thing. And then finally, investor documents. If you got the client, they're going to have to raise money. There's different ways, structures they can use to go raise that money. So some startups are going to issue convertible notes. That's very popular, which is basically debt on the balance sheet that later is either forced or can turn into equity. And so founders like to issue those because it kind of can lock in a valuation. Someone gives you $1 million and you quote, kind of owe them the money, but actually it can either just automatically turn to equity later. Now it does give investors a little more protection in case the whole thing goes bad. The convertible note holders are ahead of the stockholders. Another kind that's more favorable to the founding team are SAFE agreements, simple agreement for equity. I've had people try to get me to invest in deals and I'm like, no way, I'll do a convertible note. Simple agreement for equity is really good for a company because it gives you no control over their assets. So if they talk you into giving them $500,000 for 10% of the company and then things just don't work out, guess what? You get nothing back and you have no claim in court or anything, but you do get to put off a valuation to a later date, and those can be tricky. Shares can also be sold in C corps, just straight up shares, or you can even sell a member interest. So you form an LLC and you can just sell flat out 10% of that LLC to somebody else. You're still going to need a valuation and agreed on in the financial model. There's also many legal documents and consents that you need to go with these things on a capital raise. So here's just some of the ones I've highlighted that are possible. So term sheet, amended and restated certificate of incorporation, often after the investment comes, convertible note agreements, SAFE document, preferred stock investment agreement. You'll have to have an investor suitability questionnaire to not violate any SEC rules or Regulation D, all that stuff. Investor right agreements, shareholder written consents, board written consents, subscription agreements with the investors and voter rights agreements, and maybe even more. Maybe they redo employment agreements as well. We're going to have to track all of these at inception and quarterly, and again, maintain our cap table. LLCs raise money, we'll need a term sheet, still need the suitability questionnaire and investor right agreement, could have a convertible note or a SAFE agreement. And again, tracking these all quarterly going through. So out at the end of all that, it's complicated. Hopefully you've got a good idea now of whichever track, you know, what documents to use and some of the issues and the pros and cons. And again, at the end of the day, remember, what's the best structure for our farm or dispensary in Ohio? It depends. And even layered over all that, to tie it into Ohio, I don't know what the Ohio rules are. I want to take a look at those too. So we got to look at all that stuff. Don't use entities just to beat 280. It will not work. That's one of the key takeaways.